Mr. Carter, and we have Mr. Thomas Key to argue on behalf of Mr. Harvey. All right, if you're ready to proceed. Mr. Malone, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. We are here today on an appeal involving a partition action wherein the Judge Brotherton in Wichita Falls had entered an order ordering the sale of a 49-acre tract of land. The appellant, my client in this case, owns and has owned since at least 1982 an undivided 1/8 interest in this 49 acres. The other portions of that property had previously been owned by various family members of the Carter family, at least during that relevant time period from 1982 until shortly before the partition action was filed. Mr. Harvey purchased 7/8 interest from the other family members and very shortly thereafter subsequently filed the partition action, which is his absolute right to do as a co-tenant of the property. Basically, what we have at issue in this particular appeal is really three different issues that I would like to have the opportunity to address today. The first of these has to do with the claim of my client for equitable reimbursement relating to certain improvements that were placed upon the property during the co-tenancy. The second issue has to do with the decision of the trial court to order a sale instead of a partition in kind, which we believe clearly is in violation of Texas law. And the third has to do with the issue of a third party who owns an interest in the real property but was not joined in the suit. The first issue dealing with the right of equitable reimbursement is a situation that when a co-tenant has affected improvements to a piece of real property, then at a time when that tenancy is going to be dissolved by partition, divorce, death, then an equitable claim arises wherein that person who has affected the improvements can say and come to the court and say, this piece of property didn't have these improvements. I was responsible or at least partially responsible in this particular case for those improvements, and that should be taken into consideration by the trial court in the partition action. What happened in this case is that a family business, a number of which the owners were also co-tenants, constructed a building during the period of time back in the late 80s and 90s. The company, Carter Wind Systems, subsequently quit operating. They transferred all of their assets, including whatever claims they had, to the shareholders. And then when the partition suit was filed, Mr. Carter claimed that he was responsible, at least in part, for the improvements which had been made to the property, and he should be entitled to some sort of equitable reimbursement. The position of the plaintiff in that case was is that if there were any claims, they belonged to a company or the company, and that those were extinguished years ago, at least by 1994, when the company ultimately dissolved. I believe that's incorrect for a number of different reasons, but the initial idea that a co-tenant that can affect improvements is somehow obligated to sue his remaining co-tenants back in the 90s in order to assert some sort of equitable reimbursement claim makes absolutely no sense. The law is clear that those claims do not arise. The cause of action isn't created until such time as the partition action is made, because that's the time when the joint tenancy is being, or the co-tenancy is being disturbed. And that's true in situations of divorce. It's the same thing in the situations of probate cases. If I use separate funds to improve a piece of community property, then I don't make a claim until there's been an issue arising with regards to that. And that issue didn't arise until the filing of the partition action. The claim was made. What the trial court said was that, no, this was a claim that belonged to this corporation and that it had to be brought within 3 years of the date of the dissolution of the corporation. We believe that's absolutely incorrect, that we are entitled to make those equitable arguments, have them considered by the trial court in determining if there was, in fact, some sort of right for equitable reimbursement. We do admit that once you get into that situation, there's a lot of fact issues in terms of what kind of reimbursement, value of the improvements, all of those things. But we were precluded entirely because of the ruling of the trial court's motion on this partial summary judgment. And as a result, we believe that that is sufficient in and of itself for reversal and remand. The second issue that I want to address has to do with the decision of the trial court to order a sale of the property. The law is abundantly clear in Texas that partition in kind is the favored method in a partition suit, and that if you are going to order a sale of the property, it is the plaintiff's burden to provide evidence and proof that the property is to partition in kind would be unfair and would substantially reduce the value or impair the value of the two separate estates. The record in this case is simply non-existent with regards to that evidence. There was a good bit of evidence, which is going to slightly overlap with my third point, about a wind turbine that's currently located on the property. The plaintiff's expert testified that what he was asked to do was to figure out if there was a way to partition the property so that in the 1/8 division belonging to my client, he could include the wind turbine. And he said, you know, that just really wouldn't work. When asked on cross-examination, if we ignore the existence of the wind turbine, which the trial court ultimately did by determining that it was a trade fixture, was the property divisible in kind? And he said, absolutely. This is a 49-acre tract of land. Normally, sales are made two reasons in Texas. One, you have a single lot, residential home, those kinds of situations. The other situation involves situations where the interest that is involved becomes so small as to be problematic. Fractionalized interest, where you may have a 10-acre tract, but someone owns a 1/5/12 interest. And in those situations, the court says, we sell the property. But in situations where you have large tracts of land, we have a 7/8, 1/8 owner, unless there is some sort of compelling evidence, which is simply not in existence in this record, then the decision ought to be for a partition in kind and an appointment of appropriate commissioners in order to make that decision about how that property is going to be divided. And it's clear in this case that as a result, what the trial court did was appoint a receiver for the sale of the property, and that action is simply incorrect.
But what evidence was submitted by either side that indicated it could be partitioned in kind?
Well, the substantive evidence that it could be partitioned in kind was provided by the plaintiff's own expert on cross-examination. When asked that question, he responds absolutely let me ask you a question. If you were to just, this is a question to this expert on the division. If you were to just take, if the wind generator was not part of the analysis, There's no question this property could be divided in kind. Is that correct? And his expert testified, yes, you could partition it if the wind generator wasn't included. And what the decision of the trial court, again, the value of the wind generator, all of those issues that there was some discussion about in the trial court were not taken into account because the court concluded that the wind generator was nothing but a removable trade fixture. So if you take that testimony and that finding by the court and you add the expert testimony, then it's clear that this is a piece of property which is capable of being divided in kind, which would be the typical division, particularly in a large multi-acre tract of land. Finally, Your Honor, and this gets into a bit about the wind turbine, which is located on the property. The testimony at trial from the plaintiff was that the wind generator or the wind turbine is owned not by the defendant in the case, Jay Carter, but actually owned by his son, Matthew Carter. And the result of that is that we have a situation where an individual who has an interest in this property is not joined as a party.
He has an interest in what you want us to believe Judge Brotherton got right, that was a removable trade fixture, not in the real property, correct?
That is correct. The finding from Judge Brotherton was that this was a removable trade fixture, but there's also information that in the record that has to do with not only the portion of the wind turbine that can be removed, but there's also foundations and substructure with regards to the wind turbine.
Is there evidence that this other third party owns the foundation and substructure?
Well, that's part of the wind turbine. And so
that's not the part that's removable.
No.
Okay, but is there evidence that he owns any part of the real estate?
No.
Okay. No. And this is an issue you didn't raise in the trial court, correct?
Well, we raised it on our motion for a new trial. We weren't trial counsel, Your Honor. We didn't raise this.
Okay, but it wasn't raised.
It was not raised. It was not raised. But again, in fact, it's once again the plaintiff's burden to join the proper people and all of the people who have an interest in the real estate. It's frankly not the defendant's burden in order to do that.
But you just said he didn't have an interest in the real estate.
Well, he has an interest in the property, even if it is in the situation of a removable trade fixture, because now we have an order that appoints a receiver to sell the property but doesn't deal with the issue of the wind turbine. And so the receiver doesn't have authority to remove it.
But the third party does, doesn't he? Or who owns it?
He would perhaps have the authority to do it, but he's not obligated to do it. And the testimony is it's going to cost tens of thousands, $50,000 to $75,000 to actually move it. So it's a situation where you have an ordering a sale that does not dispose of or deal with this particular issue. Now, that, in my opinion, is more of a practical issue with regards to the order that has been entered in this case. We believe that based upon particularly the issues with the summary judgment and the issues of the partition, that this case needs to be reversed and remanded and provide an opportunity to cure not only those particular reversible errors, but to also cure whatever issue there may be with regards to the wind turbine and with regards to the failure of Matt Carter to be a party in the case. And if there's nothing further, I will.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Malone. Mr. Key, who will argue on behalf of Irwin Lee Harvey.
May it please the court. Your Honors, I'll go through these in the same order in which they were discussed by the appellant. First off, on the question of equitable reimbursement for improvements, the question is, in inception, who made the improvements? Was it a co-tenant or was it a stranger to the title? And in this case, there's no doubt it's a stranger to the title. It's a third-party corporation. Now, what the appellant wants us to do is just ignore the corporate form and say, well, that was really me and my family members making this improvement as co-tenants and not a corporation. But there's no basis on which to do that. We've got an improvement that's made by a third party, and in fact, he's asking for his percentage on the improvements to be adjusted based upon his corporate ownership, not his co-tenant ownership. So that brings up the question, somebody who's going to buy a property and he buys 7/8 interest, and when he buys that, he's going to assume that he's buying a 7/8 interest in all of it, unless there's something that puts him on notice that there's an improvement by a co-tenant. But here we've got an improvement by somebody else. And it just
the title policy disclosed the fact that at least the title company couldn't guarantee or prove up ownership of the title, and they specifically accepted from coverage anything regarding the Carters.
Well, that may be true, Your Honor, but that still doesn't change or transmute this claim from an improvement made by a third party to one by a co-tenant. It just simply wasn't an improvement by a co-tenant. It could have been the case that the Carters didn't own any stock in the corporation at the time. All we really know, I think, is that they owned stock in the corporation when it was dissolved. I don't think there's any evidence in the record as to the ownership of the corporation at the time that the improvements were actually constructed. All we know is that when Carter Wind Systems dissolved, they purported to assign their claim to the shareholders. And then that brings up a point that is cited in both briefs, and that is that an assignee steps into the shoes of the assignor and has no greater rights than the assignor has. So whatever opportunity Carter Wind Systems would have had to assert a claim for these improvements, Jay Carter Jr. has the same opportunity. And this corporation, claim by a corporation, had to dissolve, had to end within 3 years of the dissolution of the corporation. So that's why I think the court seized upon that point in our summary judgment and resolved it on that basis without getting into the other issues. I think we have brought forth cross points on that that would allow the court to affirm the summary judgment either on the 4-year statute of limitations, either on a good faith purchaser or upon latches. We've done everything that we have to do to bring that point of error to the court, and if those points are salient to the court, if you think that's an additional reason, I certainly think you should go that way. But frankly, I think the 3-year statute is the right way to approach it, because there's no question that these improvements were made by a corporation, that the corporation dissolved in 1994, and based upon that, whatever happened after that, whoever it was assigned to, they step into the shoes of that corporation, and they're bound by that 3-year statute of limitations. Now, on the sale in kind issue, we are, again, just focusing, the appellant wants to focus on one or two lines of testimony out of the entire record. The expert on cross said what he said, but he also, on the rebuttal, testified regarding the particular division that was proposed by Mr. Carter, that if you divided the property that way so that he could get the wind turbine location, then by doing so, you're going to be giving him a disproportionate share, you're going to be hurting my client's access to the road, and you're still going to be losing the value of that electrical connection, because the box is in the building that under any scenario is going to my client, and the wind generator location is not, so they would still have to spend $75,000 to go put in an electrical connection so they could keep using that wind generator at its current location if that was set aside to them in an in-kind sale. Of course, our position is that the lines that they drew, just that's not a 1/8, 7/8, any way you slice it. That just goes to show you that if they can't even draw out a hypothetical division of 1/8 to 7/8 that's credible, I think that buttresses the court's finding. And again, the court is acting as the finder of fact, and so if there's any evidence in the record to support that finding, then that ruling should be affirmed by the court. It's true that petitioning kind is favored, but again, the finding of fact, there's evidence in the record to support that. Now, one thing that we constantly get into here is kind of a word game with the wind generator versus the location. And my witness probably wasn't as precise as it should have been, and I shouldn't have been at trial, but the wind generator itself is a piece of personality that can be removed, and nobody disputes that. I think everybody's satisfied with the court's ruling on that. But the wind generator location, the foundation, the electrical connection, that's a fixture to the property, can't be removed, and it is where it is. So if we divide it in kind, either the Carters aren't going to get that location, in which case they've already told us they're not going to be happy with this division, or if they get that location, they're still not going to have the electrical connection, and they're going to have to spend $75,000 to keep operating that wind generator location. And that ties directly into what the standard is on division in kind. It's not simply can you divide it in kind, it's can you divide it in kind without damaging the value of the entire property. And if you divide this property such that the building and the wind generator location are in separate tracks, then you have, by that fact alone, you've diminished the value of the property $75,000.
But if you removed the wind generator, took it to a separate location altogether, then you could divide the property in kind and not diminish the value of the property, couldn't you?
You could divide the property in kind. There's no question that you can divide it 1/8 to 7/8. But I still think you've got problems with diminishing the value of the property.
Why?
Because the only way to feasibly do that really would be to cut off a section off the north end of the property and give that to the Carters. That's also the most valuable portion of the property, and it's also the portion that has road access. So if you slice off all the good unimproved property, then we're going to be hemmed in, have no room for expansion in that direction. In the south, there was testimony about how that land is not desirable. It's subject to flooding. And then you're going to also limit our road access. So that is going to diminish the value of the...
Have any evidence to support everything that you just said?
I believe that's all in the record, Your Honor. I believe the witnesses testified to that. My client testified to that.
Your expert said it could be done.
And on cross-examining on the direct and then on the rebuttal, we went through that with their scenario. We went through how that was going to impact the value of the property. I think we covered all those points on the rebuttal, Your Honor.
Okay.
I stand to be corrected on that, but that's my recollection. But again, the classic example of the division in kind problem is the Persian rug example. You can divide anything. You say you've got two people on an interest in a Persian rug. Well, sure, you can divide it in half, but once you cut a Persian rug in half, you're not left with an equal, the same value property. You've destroyed the inherent value of the property. And that's what we really have here. True, this isn't a house. It's not a situation where the improvement takes up the whole of the property, but it is a property such that the unique characteristics of it make it infeasible to divide it in kind without diminishing the value of the whole. And it's also going to be, it would be incredibly difficult to for special commissioners to go in and try to figure out just exactly how many square feet we're going to give to that 1/8, how many we can give to that 1/8 without damaging the value of the 7/8 given the road frontage issue. Again, and even if you do that, the only feasible a partition is one where he doesn't get the wind generator location. And I find it kind of odd that he's asking the court to remand it to go back and divide in kind, knowing that what's going to happen when it's divided in kind is he's not going to get what he really wants, which is the wind generator location. Whereas if we sell this property, then whoever buys it, whether it's one of the parties or a third party, they will get to maximize the full value of that entire property in every way conceivable by bidding on it and getting the whole of the property. That's the only way we're going to see full value of this tract between these parties. Now, On the final issue on the party joiner, I think the court identified the issues. Number one, Matt Carter doesn't own an interest in the real property. Therefore, he's not a necessary party to a partition suit. He's not even really a proper party to a partition suit. But they've also waived that by not asserting it prior to trial. So there's really no basis to go back and reverse this case on the basis that Matt Carter is not a party to the case. Your Honor, I feel like I've addressed the issues. If you have any other questions, any other areas you'd like to explore,
I'd be happy. I have one.
Yes.
Maybe it's just because there was so much attention focused on the wind turbine. Did your expert put values on the other improvements? There's two or three buildings that I believe are.
No, he didn't. He didn't try to go and do the value that way. He did the value of the whole property based upon the sale of the property. It had been marketed for a number of years, and my client's purchase of the 7/8 interest was, he felt, the best evidence of what the property was worth. That was an arm's length transaction negotiated between the parties, and it's a very unique tract, so it's difficult to go in and try to carve it up. He did testify extensively on the value of the unimproved portions of the property, that the north end of the property, where they have the road access next to the subdivisions, is worth much more than the south end of the property. And just given the rectangular shape of the property and the location of the improvements in the center, it's going to be hard to carve up something where everybody's really getting equal part of the property. You're going to be taking a big shot in the dark if you start to say, okay, I'm going to carve off 1/8 here, and that's really proportionate, equal to the 7/8, and doesn't diminish the value of the whole tract. That's going to be incredibly difficult. And I think if it was feasible, they would have proposed a division. It was, but if you reviewed the division that they proposed, I think you'd have to agree with me that that's not a 1/8, 7/8 division.
Thank you, Mr. Key. All right, we'll have rebuttal. Mr. Malone.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honors. Council talked about us proposing certain divisions of property. We were the defendant in this case. We have no obligation to propose divisions of property. We have no obligation to prove anything. We didn't want to be there, and we didn't want to be sued. It is his burden. It is the plaintiff's burden, and the case law is clear on this, that if he wants an order of sale, it is his burden to prove that this division in kind is not reasonable and would substantially impair not just the value of the whole tract, but the value of both of the separate estates. Trying to figure out, oh, how much land should this person get for their 1/8, that is exactly what commissioners do every day in partition actions. Every time you're going to say, I've got this 50 acres, golly, if I'm entitled to 1/8, I may not get exactly 1/8 of the acreage because some has better road frontage, some has not. To say that we have some responsibility for that is simply inaccurate. As a result, it seems abundantly clear that the court erred with regards to the order of sale. With regards to the equitable reimbursement, he wants to claim that this somehow all belongs to the corporation and we can't ignore that. Equitable reimbursement is much broader than that. Whether I go out and build a building myself, whether I go hire Thomas Byrne to build a building on my property, the building doesn't belong to Thomas Byrne just because they built the building. If I have a friend who happens to go out and likes to build buildings and I get him to go build a facility on a piece of property where there's a co-tenancy, I'm the person who has affected that improvement. There was no building before, there is now a building, and now we're going to partition the property. I have the right to come to the court and say, I am responsible for having this improvement on the property, whether, again, it's built by my own hands, someone else's hands, or through a family company. And the issue arises at that point in time when that tenancy is being terminated, and that's the partition action.
We made that request. The trial court denied flat out by claiming that, oh, this was a corporate claim that had to be brought within 3 years. And that's just wrong. And with regards to the wind turbine issue, and this is still a fundamental problem. He admits that this, quote, foundation is a fixture to the real property. And the testimony is that Matthew Carter owns the wind turbine. We've got an issue about that in terms of, does he own the fixture? Does he own just the little part that you might be able to remove? It's just a mess. Now, in light of the other reversible errors, we would respectfully request that this court, after review and consideration, reverse and remand this case to the trial court so that we have an opportunity to retry this case and get it right. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Malone, Mr. Key, we appreciate you being here today to argue, and we also appreciate all your briefing in this matter. That concludes our 10:30 docket, so we will now adjourn.
All right. The Honorable Court of Appeals of the Second District of Texas, now standing adjourned, is adjourned.